Welcome to KUOW's Speakers Forum. I'm your host, John O'Brien. In this episode, we modern humans are so evolved. We have science and the media to tell us what's true and not, right? Well, since that's a controversial subject these days, perhaps it's a good time to look back at how we figured out the world long, long ago, through story and song, myth and poetry. Human beings have depended on mythology since the beginning of our existence. Myths told us how the world began, how to understand its trials and wonders, and how it might end. Yet now, when many of us believe something is not true, we call it a myth. What happened? Mythologist and author Michael Mead has devoted his life to that question. He urges us to dig deeper into myth as a path to deeper understanding, health, and healing. Michael Mead's latest book is The Genius Myth. He spoke at Vashon Island's Open Space for Arts and Community on March 29th. In this talk, Touching the Soul of the World, he explores what stories and myths tell us about modern life.
All right, thanks for coming out. I think the title is Touching the Soul of the World. And so it's like a big idea thing. And so I want to lay out a series of big ideas, mostly mythic ideas. So in the modern world, myth is used to say, oh, it's just a myth, which means something false. But the root meaning of myth, besides story, is emergent truth. So a myth is a series of lies that tells the truth, right? The current administration is a series of attempts at truth that turn out to be lies. At least that's the way it looks to me. I'm going to try and keep my political comments in check tonight.
Why?
Well, I've gotten in trouble in other places. All right, well, anyway, we'll see how it goes. But the idea is to take a look at some of these big issues from the point of view of myth and imagination. So imagination is called the deepest power of the human soul. Human soul has lots of powers, but imagination is the deepest root of humanity. Humans are the people who imagine everything. For instance, the smallest tribe on the Amazon River. There's a tribe there of only 30-some-odd people, and they have a cosmology that explains the entire world, all the planets, all of nature, and everything. Humans are the only cosmologists, and we may be the only mythologists. And again, if you think of myth as the deeper story and the only way to tell the truth, I don't know if you got that memo. The facts can never tell the truth. That's why everybody argues about them. The facts can only tell part of the truth, and then underneath the surface, where the facts and your figures tend to hang out, are the deeper truths, the truths of the soul, the truths of the heart. And part of what's happening in the modern world is we have people trying to solve everything through the facts. And what happens, and then unfortunately, instead of imagination, you now have ideologies. I don't know if you got that definition. You pick up an ideology when you've lost your imagination. And that's fine. I mean, it may be okay. The problem I have with ideologies, if a person takes seriously an ideology and replaces their imagination with it, it makes it easier for them to reject, exile, deport, defame, and diminish other people. You get what I'm saying? Because the ideology replaces the deeper thing, which is the feeling of the heart and the soul, the compassion, which are the deeper aspects of humanity and what people are supposed to be growing in a bigger fashion as they get older. You know what I'm saying? In other words, when people get older, they're supposed to get wiser and deeper and therefore more compassionate. And when you have people who have reached a certain age and they're handling power and they haven't gotten older or wiser, everyone suffers. The other problem that happens is everyone suffers greater anxiety. So I don't know if you've experienced that. So one of the things we all have in common now is collective anxiety. Anxiety is a normal thing. It's a healthy thing, actually. If you have a test the next day, you get anxious. You should get anxious. It's fine. But if you have anxiety and you don't know why, that's called collective anxiety or cultural anxiety, and there's no cure for it. In other words, you don't know why you're anxious, and therefore you can't get out of it very well unless you step into stories. Stories are vessels and containers that hold things that we can't hold simply with our usual ways of thinking and feeling. At least that's the old idea, and I'm sticking with that. So another old idea is you don't start something that you want to be meaningful without a song. So another anxiety reducer is music, song, and rhythm. You can shift everything going on in the brain and in the feeling system just by shifting the rhythm. And traditional people throughout the world would use songs to carry things that you can't carry in conversation and you can't get rid of easily. Am I making sense? And people used to have shared songs. Most traditional cultures have shared songs for just about everything that happens, for an illness, for a tragic loss, for a delightful celebration. They have songs that help them do that. And so I thought I'd start with a song. Are you ready for that?
Yeah.
And so this is a song I think of a lot these days. It's a song from the Dogara tribe in West Africa, a tribe that I worked with for quite a while. Matter of fact, they gave me this drum. This is not a drum I purchased. I didn't steal it. It was a gift from the tribe. And they also gave me a bunch of songs, and this is one of them. And the rule with traditional songs is you don't have to be accurate, right? It's in a language you don't know, and it doesn't matter if you're on key. The real main thing is volume. So this is a good song because it only has one word. And the word is azima, which is the Dogara word for, it means the presence of the earth and gratitude to the earth for being there in that one word. So it goes like this. Azima woe, azima woe, azima woe, azima woe, azima woe. You get the idea? Praise to the earth. The earth is holding us no matter what we do. Make your worst mistake, take another step, and the earth will meet your foot. The earth represents welcoming, forgiveness, abundance. It's a really important source of energy. And according to the old cultures, even if you're standing on concrete, which we're now sitting on, the energy of the earth can come up through that and enter through your feet. Do you know the Spanish word duende? Duende is a reference to the dark energy of the earth trying to arise from the center of the planet through the feet of people in order to aid the expression of their spirit and life. You get that idea? So when you sing to the earth, you're inviting that energy. All right, you want to try it?
Yeah.
Azima woe, azima woe, azima woe. Azima wo, azima wo, azima wo, eh, azima wo, azima wo. Azima wo, azima wo, azima wo, eh, azima wo, Azimabo. One more time. Azimabo. 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 Thank you. Thanks for singing. That's the old tradition, you know. Everybody's upset, not sure what to do. Sit down and sing together. Sometimes the only harmony we can find is in a song. And I think we're living in a period where we're going to need the aid of old traditions to get through modern problems. One of the problems with the modern world is it's an intensely collectivized society. That is to say, it diminishes the individual for the benefit of the collective. So people are considered to be part of an age group, a purchasing group, a voting group, all that kind of stuff. And there are people busy collecting all the information. They know better than we do what we're interested in by this point. But what that doesn't allow for is the individual. And so one of the really old ideas is that history doesn't happen in the outside world coming towards us. History is made in the depths of the individual human soul. Humans are here to make history, not to repeat it, and not to try to escape from it. So the individual is, all right, the big idea is called the three levels of the world. The macrocosm, everybody knows macro means big. So the macrocosm is the systems of the galaxies and the stars. And then the microcosm is a minor version of the macrocosm. And each person is considered to be a micro version of the macrocosm. The poet Rumi, who has become famous in the United States, even though he died in the 14th century, he says the world inside is greater than the world outside. That gets back to the idea of imagination. That inside ourselves, we are enormous beings full of history, full of imagination, full of elements of nature as well. So the individual, in a certain sense, is equal to the big macrocosm. And so the third one, of course, is in the middle, and that's called the mesocosm, as in mezzanine or mesozoic, something in the middle. And so no matter what happens in the culture, and we are in a period of unraveling, let's say, but no matter what happens, the stars still move in their courses. The macrocosm continues on. And no matter what happens in the culture, inside the depth of the soul of each individual person born, girl, boy, gendered this way, gendered that way, this kind of status, that kind of immigrant status, whatever it is, each one born is born with a unique soul. And that unique soul is equal in certain sense to the macrocosm. So what happens is the mesocosm, the middle ground, gets extremely messy. It falls apart, right? We're living in one of the most unusual times in the sense that nature is rattling and culture is unraveling, right? It's not just that they have put people in charge of the different departments of the government who think that that department shouldn't exist. Have you followed that? So it's not just that, it's that the institutions have been hollowing out anyway. You know, people are saying, geez, it might be the end of the world. No, the world already ended a while ago. We're in the after effect of a world that we used to think existed. You get what I'm saying? And I'll explain why that's not the worst thing that could happen. But in the meantime, the mesocosm gets all disrupted, and you get all kinds of terrible things going on, fearful things going on, increase of anxiety, lack of coherence, fake news instead of real news, whatever you want to focus on, it's all the disturbance in the mesocosm. So that won't be easily fixed. It's not going to be fixed by the next election or the one after that. It's a big cycle moving through the whole of the world, so to speak. So the one idea is when the mesocosm gets so rocky that you can't orient properly, you have two other places to go. One is to be in touch with the big singing of the spheres and the ongoing drama of creation happening every night, every day, the movement of all those planets, the song that they're singing. And the other place to go is to go deep inside and be in touch with the root of one's own being, which I've written a book about, to say one of the key parts of that is genius. That is to say, I have a hard time with the modern world because I love language and I'm always studying the roots of words. And so in the modern world, words often mean the opposite of what they're supposed to mean, like myth and false. But also genius. Most people think genius means high IQ or unusual talent, but the word genius means the spirit that's already there when you're born. The genius is a spirit inside each person. Everyone is a genius in their own right. Everyone came here with certain gifts and qualities intended to be given to the world. That's the purpose of being in the world. And so when the mesocosm and the institutions don't provide stability or protection, connecting to the big movement of the planets and the stars. People used to have no lights at night. The lights were the stars. The whole world came to an end when daylight ended, right? Remember when they had sundials? After dark, the sundial doesn't work well. It can't dial anything in. And so everything used to disappear. And night. And since there was no time, everybody was in eternity. And then in the morning when the sun came back, the hours started up again. And people used to dip into eternity every night. It's hard to do that now. So you can do it, though, in your dreams or by being connected to things that have a touch of the eternal in them. Little problem when you go inside if you happen to be, say, a Freudian, right? Right, you know what I'm saying? Like Freud, when he got older, he had really big nightmares. Mostly about the idea that inside was a primal horde that was going to rise up and decapitate him. And so going inside became a bit of a problem. So I recommend being a Jungian. Because Jung was the student of Freud. You know how it is, the student reverses what the teacher was doing. And Jung says deep inside is the divine waiting to be found. So if you follow that idea, then we go inside. Another way to look at that is this. In the modern world, there may be no coherence, but there's a yoga studio in every strip mall. Think about it. You know, every strip mall has to have a coffee shop, you know, some kind of a printing operation, and a yoga studio. And the beauty of that is ideas of the West, of the East coming into the West, because in the East, they have had the idea for a very long time that what we're looking for is inside. And in the West, manifest destiny, materialistic ideas, people are looking for something outside that cannot simply be found out there. And so the movement of Eastern ideas into Western culture is really beneficial if you follow the idea that what we're looking for is inside. And then you don't have to be a Freudian and get worried. I'm not saying there aren't disturbing things in there. I mean, I assume you've had a family. And you know, they took that survey of families, how many families are dysfunctional? And it turned out to be 103%. Because some of them are pathological liars. And they spoke up twice. But so to get in touch with one deeper self, you have to go through some of the stuff that has to do with family and stuff like that. But from a mythological point of view, everyone has this seed of genius inside. That genius is connected to a destiny, and each person came here to find the path of their destiny and fulfill it. That's the old idea. And I think it's ready for a comeback because there's some old proverbs. One of them says, in comfort, genius is concealed. In struggle, genius is revealed. So one of the benefits of being in a time of trouble is that it's possible to reveal more of the hidden genius. In other words, if we think we're empty inside, which is the basic idea of modern culture, that you're empty until the world writes on you, if we think we're empty inside, then we have nowhere to go when the outside structures begin to dysfunction. If we remember what all the old cultures said, is that something inside us is unique, gifted, and valuable, then when the things outside aren't working, we can turn more fully inside and learn how our soul would have us go in the world. So that's the story of most old stories. I thought I would read a poem to reinforce that. Oh, here's one. So I collect poems and I mark the poems in the book, and then I mark so many that it doesn't matter which one I read after a while. William Stafford, a tremendous poet who lived in Oregon, died about, 12, 13 years ago. I had the good fortune of working with him for years before he died. What happens when you get lost? Out in the mountains, nobody gives you anything, and you learn what the rules were after the game is over. And by then, it is already night, and it doesn't make any difference what anyone else is thinking or doing. You have to turn into an Indian. By that, he means you have to turn into an indigenous person. You have to find the indigenous roots of your own being, because there you will find healthy, active instincts and intuitions. And then you remember stories. And then you know that the tellers were part of all they said, and everyone is, even you. And they are all around you. But if you're too afraid, you will never find them. That's a reference to the idea no one is ever really alone in this world, unless we're too afraid, and then we feel very alone. In traditional cultures, the ancestors are always with us. In other cultures, the spirits are with us, or elements of nature are with us. Modern people get trapped in a narrow, logical idea of being alive and miss all the things trying to support our life, some of them unseen, some of them hidden inside. He goes on, those questions people used to ask, what would you do if, what would you do if so-and-so got elected? What would you do if? They have their own answer now. Nothing. Listen, some things cannot be redeemed in a hurry, no matter about good intentions. What could be done had to have happened a long time ago, for mistakes have consequences that do not just disappear. You know how serious an issue that is now in this culture. Mistakes, untruths, misguided things, unethical things have consequences that do not simply disappear. Listen, if evil could simply be canceled, it wouldn't be very evil. That's a great line. You get like a week off for that line. Poets don't get paid much, but you get time off. So here he goes right into the idea of the macrocosm. Meanwhile, the stars you see while you drift away have their own courses. They watch you, and they already know your name. So that's a modern poet tying into what they call cosmology and mythology and saying the stars know our name. So it's a really interesting thing that astrophysicists now, studying the origin of the universe, they call it the Big Bang, and they say what exists in the world all had to be there at the beginning or it couldn't exist. It's a pretty good idea. It's an old mythological idea, too. They say everything at the beginning. So they deduce from that everybody alive has to have a speck of that original star in them or they couldn't be here. That is to say, everybody has a star inside. And you know the word destiny, it means destiny. It means of the stars. We are of the stars. And I'll tell you other things. I study science nowadays because science is catching up with myth. And so they have figured out now that there's something like 400,000 pounds of stardust falls on the Earth every year. And it doesn't just disappear, it gets absorbed into trees and plants. And when we eat plants, vegetables, and stuff like that, we're eating stardust. We're living on the stars, and we are born from the stars. I love that crap. After about 15 minutes of CNN, I tell myself that. So that's the idea. We have a name, and it used to be understood, like in Mayan culture, You have a name that no one knows, but it's really your name. But the stars know it because we are the children of the stars. So I love these big ideas because, to me, you need big ideas to defeat bad programs. You know what I'm saying? We're in something that's bigger than a political issue. I mean, there are political factors in it, but I think it's a much bigger thing. I think it's a challenge to the idea of democracy, to the idea of a meaningful, healthy culture. And I think more than that, it's the opportunity for the return of imagination. Because another old idea is, when everything falls apart, there's an acceleration of calling. Calling, you know what I mean? The idea that, well, it's tricky in America because people are so hung up on choice. Like, choice is interesting. I'm in favor of choice, and I think you should have a level playing field, and everybody should have a whole bunch of choices. But it's more important to be called than to simply have choices. Am I making sense?
Yeah.
Because the calling is calling to something beyond the obvious. And in fact, the calling is calling to the genius inside of the person. That's what it's calling to. And just for those, I see a few people look a little bit older in the audience, just, you know, by way of encouragement and diminishing anxiety, because that's been said was part of the plan. No matter how old you get, the calling keeps calling. The calling is very specific to the individual, and you could live 50, 60, whatever number of years, and the calling keeps calling. It's an essential part to our soul. We're not here just to fit in. You have to fit in enough not to get arrested. But but beyond that, we're here to answer the call and become a unique person. You know that idea? Remember the Miguel de Unamuno, the Spanish poet philosopher? He said, you want to live in such a way that when you die, everyone knows something is missing in the world. That's our job, is to live and make enough soulful mistakes that we're not easily forgotten. I'm trying to say these things as an antidote to what's happening in the culture, which I think is going to continue to be very difficult. So one more big idea, and then I'll get into some stories. An old Greek word is apokalypsis, not apocalypse. Apocalypse has come to mean the big fiery end of everything, right? Right? Or, you know, zombie apocalypse now. you realize the Walking Dead becomes popular because it's symptomatic of the culture when so many people are walking dead because they haven't awakened to the thing trying to call them to live a real life. That's how that stuff works. The popular thing is a kind of an interpretation of a cultural thing going on. So anyway, apocalypsis means a time when things fall apart and other things are born. It's a time of collapse and renewal. In other words, are we living through a collapse? Are we living through a challenge or even threat to common freedoms, to the idea of democracy, to the chance to have a meaningful life? Yes, we are. But while those things are rattling and collapsing, on the other side, other things are trying to be born. I'm not going to tell it tonight, but there's a wonderful Native American story where the old woman of the world, who weaves everything, has her weaving unravel. And she sits in the midst of all this unraveling, trying to figure out what to do, goes through whatever emotions you have when everything unravels before your eyes. And then she sees a loose thread, and she picks up the thread, and she gets a new vision, and she begins weaving the whole world again. We're in that moment of collapse and renewal, of disaster and opportunity. I hope that makes sense, because otherwise we're screwed. Right? There has to be more to the world than what people are making it out to be right now. And it has to be. I'm not saying don't vote, you know, vote several times. But what I'm saying is that politics cannot answer these questions. We're living at a time of radical climate change. They have no idea what to do about it. Therefore, they'll keep arguing about health care. Well, they're not arguing about health care. They're arguing about insurance policies, right? Because health care, you know what? These are two great words. When you put them together, everybody should feel better. Health and care. Health comes from an old English word meaning whole, hale, and healthy. And care comes from an old word meaning deeply interested in, sympathetic with. and willing to support. That's not what we're getting. We're not getting health care. We're getting insurance against finding out what health might be like. I mean, this is the part of the problem. And so they keep fighting about things that aren't the things because they don't know. And again, loss of imagination. We live in a world that has gone flat again. Everybody's connected, but horizontally. There's a loss of vertical imagination. Back to the idea of the stars. Humans are such that our feet are planted on what they used to call the goat's earth. And our imagination, minds, are supposed to be connected to the heavens above. And we are supposed to be like channels of energy passing between those two deep, great places, deep and high places. Vertical imagination. And what's happened is the world has gone horizontal, right? Everybody's connected alone. That's one of the interpretations. We're all connected alone because it's isolating to be only horizontally connected. When community is a unity formed because something is so deep, it pulls people together no matter what their differences are. Am I making sense? Yeah. Community is not proximity, sorry. I know Vashon, people are... Just a word thing. Community is not proximity to others. It's a connection made because something so deep happens that people feel a genuine deep need for each other and care for each other, and that makes things whole and healthy. And when people are connected, everybody's more healthy, and the more a culture is divided, the more everybody gets unhealthy. I mean, I'm just saying these things because we're in trouble, you know? So, all right, I want to move towards stories. And I want to reinforce just that one idea. This is a place where choice matters. Things are going to keep falling apart, partly because of this apocalypsis movement that takes quite a while to go through. It's happened before, by the way. That's the message of mythology. Someone survived to tell the story or we wouldn't have the stories. And so, I should make that clear. Right. Did you get the memo that the world's not going to end? The word end turns out not to mean completion. The word end doesn't mean finito, good night, over and out. The word end is like it means loose end or kind of a ragged end. And in the end, there's a loose thread or a loose end that starts it all over again. The world is going to continue. From a mythological point of view, it can't end. It starts over again. It doesn't mean it's not going to be hard and it isn't difficult right now, but it can't simply end. To me, I'm relieved by that idea. That's not the issue that the world would end. The issue, I think, is whether we get caught on the side of the unraveling and the despair and the cynicism and the conflict that is very real and very intense and easy to get caught in, especially if we don't remember that the other side is the renewal, reimagination, and actual recreation. So there's another mythological idea. The world, creation didn't happen back there, and then it's just been kind of bumping along since. Creation is ongoing, right? I'm not sure if people know that. Like in Western culture, they say in the beginning was the word, and then they codify it into a book and say you have to believe it. But in tribal cultures, they say in the beginning was the sound, the resonance and reverberation and rhythm of life that once it started cannot stop, and it continues to recreate the world through each person living and all of the plants and everything too. So I like that idea a lot better. It doesn't mean we can't have big trouble. We already have that. It just means don't worry about the end of the world. And then if you take on the idea that the creation is ongoing, then humans are invited to be part of the ongoing creation of the world. And what I'm saying is when everything is falling apart, there's an acceleration of calling, and why not answer the call? It's just going to get more bumpy, difficult, disturbing, unbelievable anyway. So why not be on the path where we're being called to go? Am I making sense? Or someone once, I wrote a book called Why the World Doesn't End. I collected stories from all different cultures that show that it renews from its own ashes and so on. And someone said to me, well, wait a minute. You wrote the book. You can't really prove this. What if the world ends? And I said, consider this. If the world ends, there's no one around to tell me I was wrong. If the world ends, we're all gone. So, whatever. But even if the world is ending, I'd rather be walking towards the destiny my soul is called to than doing something else. And if the world doesn't end, I'd rather be walking towards the destiny. You get what I'm saying? It's the best thing to do, and it's the nature of human nature to be on a unique individual adventure that is the unfolding of a life that is wound inside us and unfolds like the plot line of a good story. So that's my answer, antidote to what's happening in the culture as it continues to rattle. One more turn I want to make on that. If I'm following the path that I'm called to, which, by the way, announces itself repeatedly throughout life, if I'm following that, I am much more likely to wind up at an intersection where I can be helpful to other people because I'm rooted in who I really am. And if you take the idea I said before, everybody's gifted. Everybody has something to give. I'm more likely to be helpful to others and helpful to the bigger causes in the world if I'm on the path I'm supposed to be on. Am I making sense? There is no single idea, no big vote, no big cause that's going to work for everybody. It's not like that. The only myth I've ever seen in my lifetime that had any purchase in the modern world was the hero's journey. Remember, you know the hero's journey? Joseph Campbell and that kind of, and it's a great story, the hero's journey. I just think it's not the right story for now for several reasons. It's too often imagined as what we're after is outside ourselves. It's a little bit too masculine, the whole hero thing. And it's, right? And it's too easily turned into superheroes, which is a big, fantastic waste of time. So I suggest the genius myth, which is you don't have to go looking for it because it's already inside you. Everybody has it, girl, boy, any kind of person you want to imagine already has it, and it's a matter of finding it from inside and bringing it out. And given that the world is in so much trouble throughout nature, throughout culture, heroism isn't going to fix it. As a matter of fact, heroism has gotten us into a lot of trouble. But if a whole bunch of people answered the call in all their individual strange and unique genius ways, maybe a whole bunch of people awakening could begin to solve all the problems. Does that make sense? Yeah. That's what I'm suggesting. That's a mythological idea that is rooted in the Western world. Genius is a Western kind of tradition. So that's the idea, and then I've laid it out in the Genius Myth book. All right, so now I want to move into stories. And the first one I just want to do a summary of before getting to an older, deeper story. But one of the things about stories, it says this has happened before. In stories, they have the old idea, nothing new under the sun. So it may appear with a different guise, but it doesn't appear brand new, that the things, the ongoing troubles in the world and the ongoing ways to solve the troubles in the world keep repeating. And stories hold kind of the wisdom of that. And so I'm always looking for stories to explain what we're experiencing. That's my interest. How does myth work in the modern world? And so right now, the big thing going on in this culture where we live is obviously the recent election, the new administration, and the chaos coming out of it. I mean, I say chaos because they say chaos. And then I send memos saying, if you play with chaos, it plays you. You cannot use chaos very long before it plays on you. But anyway, looking for stories. And it's interesting to me to see how the emperor without clothes is being referenced a lot, and that's a good thing. But there are other stories about people who rise to power that might come closer to the mark. And so I happened to open a book of world stories the other day, or last week, really. And I opened to a story from Eastern Europe called The Tsar Trojan Goat Ears. The Tsar is a Russian word for kind of like king or ruler. Trojan is a mistranslation of Trajan, which is actually the East European Midas, King Midas. And the story goes like this. By the way, it's translated from the Russian. Just interesting detail. It's what happens these days. So what happens is there's this little kingdom, and they have a king called Tsar Trojan. And it turns out that he has the ears of a goat, but no one knows because he has a hairdo that covers it. Swear to God. Like a back comb. And so no one knows. He has this secret, and no one knows it. He knows it, and he's trying to really keep it secret. That's the problem with a person like that, is they have to work really hard to keep the secret. And then every once in a while, he needs a haircut. And so the barber comes in, cuts the hair, and the king says, "Did you see anything strange?" And the barber says, "Well, there is a kind of goat ear thing." Off with his head. So they have to get another barber next time. So pretty much they're running out of barbers after a while. And this one master barber is invited to come and do the haircut. And he sends a message saying, "I'm sick, but I'm sending my apprentice." It has an apprentice in it. This story. I'm not even kidding. It's in a book from hundreds of years ago. So nothing new under the sun. So the apprentice goes and does the haircut, and the king said, "Anything unusual?" And he goes, "No, all normal." The king says, "Okay, you're now going to have a royal position. You'll be in the royal court." And of course, the deal is he can't reveal the secret that he knows in order to stay in the royal court, Sean Spicer. Nothing new under the sun. And so things go on, and everything's pretty cool, except the young apprentice keeps having a problem. He has a secret he's carrying that no one else knows, and he thinks it's really important. And finally he goes back to his master and says, "I have a secret. What do I do?" And he says, "Well, you could tell me, or you could go tell the pastor, or you could dig a hole in the ground and yell it three times into the ground." So this is a long time ago. So the apprentice goes, "I'll go with the door number 3. Digs a hole in the ground, yells into it, "The Tsar Trojan has goat ears," 3 times, covers up the hole and goes back, to the palace. Very quickly, from that spot where he said those words, an elder tree sprouts up, and it grows branches, and the branches are particularly straight and true. And shepherds, seeing those branches, immediately start cutting them to make flutes, because that's what they used to do. And as soon as they make the flutes and they go to play them, the flutes will only play one thing. The Tsar Trojan has goat ears. So pretty soon, all over the place, the word is out that the Tsar Trojan has goat ears. And pretty soon everybody understands what's going on, that there's a secret right in the center of the culture, right in the center of power, and now the secret is out. And then, of course, the Tsar intends to cut off the head of the apprentice, but it's too late because everybody knows. And the whole culture has to go through a change. So that's an old story from Eastern Europe, including from Russia, about what happens when someone in the office, highest office, has a secret. And I'm sure everybody has already figured out that the secret, in a sense, of Donald Trump is his extreme narcissism, right? And you can study that. So one reason I'm telling you, this isn't strictly political. It's actually mythological and it's psychological. In other words, when something is wrong and a big mistake has been made, people need psychological awareness and the courage to say, "This is a mistake." You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to go past the politics of it because they will take a long time to admit the mistake. And it's not simply politics. It's someone has been put in power that is not able to serve others because the narcissistic bubble has never broken. Am I making sense? A person with that level of narcissism can only serve themselves no matter what happens. That's what's going to happen. It's already occurring. And so it's a matter of time, I think, before everybody knows it. I don't know. I'm hoping the story is right. And maybe we can all go make flutes. I don't know. But I think that's likely to happen there. But also the point of the story is that a psychological understanding of what's happening in the world is very important. And when you see, when it looks like a secret is being covered up, it is. And I assume everybody knows what happens with everybody has narcissism. Did you get that memo? Most of us have a little bit or some. And then we have a narcissistic bubble that gets broken. We have such a difficult time with something, or we lose a loved one, or we get sick, or we get our ass kicked, or whatever it is, and the bubble bursts, and we realize we're not that special, and we realize that there are forces bigger than us, and we realize there's people hurting more than we are. You get what I'm saying? That's the breaking of the bubble. And then some people, perhaps if they're wealthy, it lasts longer. Or if they've been supported a certain way, they don't have their bubble burst. And we have someone now at the peak of power, considered to be the most powerful person in the world. Oh, by the way, narcissists want to be the most powerful person in the world. Not only that, the word Donald means ruler of all. Yeah. I mean, this is like a cursed person who has the narcissism and a narcissistic name. So anyway, that's a psychological view of it. Just to cut through and not get caught into politics and think this is about left and right, conservative and liberal, this is a mistake. And so it's a challenge whether a culture can wake up and acknowledge its own mistakes. That's the challenge, I think. And how quickly can it happen? And I think it's also, here's another idea. We've gotten to the point in American culture where we elect our symptoms. This is one to chew on. Yeah, this is an adult statement. Cultures all around the world look at America and call it narcissistic. So it's as if we have now put in charge the very symptoms we have to penetrate and outgrow. It's not important to be the best country in the world, the number one, best at everything. We just fell to 14th in happiness. They have a happiness thing now. You know, they measure everything. And so which countries are the happiest? And America was at 13. Just recently, we went to 14. If this administration continues, you know, we'll be setting minus level. But so it's not important. It's narcissistic to think we're the best country. It's kind of childish. It's not mature. It's not developed psychologically. Am I making sense? And so what's going on now is an opportunity for the maturing and awakening of the psychology of a whole culture that says we don't want to get caught in this kind of stuff again. That's just my take on that.
Thanks for streaming this episode of Speakers Forum from KUOW 94.9 Seattle. Michael Mead's latest book is The Genius Myth. He spoke at Vashon Island's Open Space for Arts and Community on March 29th. Tune in again soon.